Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening in, friends, this week. I do appreciate it, as always. Yep, if you're here in the New Orleans area listening to the show, a little bit of a tough sledding there for us in the Saints world. And I'm just going to leave it at that. Got a good show coming up for you here today. We are continuing on with our NOLA Neighborhood series. I'm very excited about it. If you caught the first one back in July or thereabouts, a semi-regular series we're going to be doing called NOLA Neighborhoods. There you go. And the whole idea is to feature and focus on particular neighborhoods in the New Orleans area, in New Orleans, that maybe you don't know so much about, whether you're a native, a local, a new transplant, or somebody coming to visit outside the area. We think all these episodes will probably teach you a little something about spots that you just may not, spend a lot of time in, be that familiar with if you're planning a trip down here. Maybe some things to go check out in some of these neighborhoods that are a little bit, it's not fair to say they're off the beaten path, because it's really quite the contrary. They're just not the famous neighborhoods that a lot of people associate with New Orleans, especially from afar. But one of the interesting things about the series, and this is part of the rationale behind it, is so much of the culture of the city, whether it be food, whether it be music, art, all kinds of other things, comes from neighborhoods not called the French Quarter, really, and not called Uptown to a certain degree as well. And so that's what we want to kind of show you, are some of these neighborhoods that, really are the vector, if you will, for so much of the culture, so much of why you love New Orleans, whether it's you living here or why you love New Orleans if you're from outside the area and are visiting here. And we want to maybe you're somebody who's been here five times and you're looking for something a little different to do. That's what we want to show to you with this series, NOLA Neighborhoods. So yeah, we did one on Bayou Road back in July. Go check that one out. You can get it on our website, noladrinks.com, and then find the podcast on your favorite podcast platform. They're all linked there for your convenience. This week's show, friends, is featuring the Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard area, which is part of Central City, a very culturally, historically, and economically important neighborhood here in New Orleans. And we taped the show over at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, which is part of the National Food and Beverage Foundation. And a friend of the show, Brent Rosen, who is the president of the National Food and Beverage Foundation, joins us. Hugo Montero, who is the proprietor of Casa Bodega, a very fine Mexican restaurant that opened up in 1999, I believe, in the area, kind of pioneering, bringing some restaurant stuff and bringing Mexican food, frankly, to New Orleans. And also very good friend of the show, Pepper Bowen, who is the director of the Culinaria Center, which is part of, also of the National Food and Beverage Foundation, joins us. And Pepper possesses a great deal of knowledge about the history and the culture of the Aretha Castle Haley neighborhood. So very excited to bring that one to you, friends. We're going to bounce over there in a couple seconds. And as I said, hey, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, and then we're going to bounce over to the Southern Food and Beverage Museum for our featured interview with Brent, Pepper, and Hugo, talking about the Aretha Castle Haley neighborhood, all part of our NOLA Neighborhoods series. Special thanks to our friends at New Orleans Tourism and Marketing Corporation and New Orleans and Company for helping us put those shows together, including this one. Take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, friends. Come on back.
When I wake up, I say a little prayer and drink up, and thank the Lord for driving me home once more. There's an open Bible on the table, an empty bottle on the floor. Last night I thought I died and went to whiskey heaven. You know the sun never shines in whiskey heaven. It rained Jack Daniels all the time.
Now, if you ever been down to New Orleans, then you can understand just what I mean. Now all through the week it's quiet as a mouse, but on Saturday night they go from house to house. You don't have to pay the usual.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the program, friends. This week, as always, as you know, we are doing another episode here, our NOLA Neighborhoods series, where we are highlighting various neighborhoods here around town that you may not know so well, or you may not know at all. And this particular week, we are here hanging out on Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard. A lot of interesting things happening here. Got two really good guests. We're going to be joined by a third as soon as she parachutes in. But first up, we have Hugo Montero, who is the proprietor and owner and all-around guy, as we were just talking about, at Casa Borrega. Hugo, welcome.
Hey, Brian. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Hugo. We actually taped a show at your place, but you weren't there. I think we did it with your son and the gang from Top Taco last year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was a lot of fun. Good spot.
Yeah, my son is in Atlanta now.
Oh, did he move to Atlanta? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, got it. Well, it's good that you're here, so I appreciate
that. Thank
you
so much.
And Brent Rosen, who is the president
Hello.
Of the, yay, man, the president of the National Food and Beverage Foundation.
Yes, and excited to be on the show and to be visiting with you today.
Yeah, it's good to see you, man. Newly minted here, so we're sitting in part of one of the organizations involved with the National Food and Beverage Foundation, the Southern Food and Beverage Museum.
Yes, our physical space here in New Orleans.
Yeah, right on. Cool, man. Thank you for hosting us.
Our pleasure. It's great to do anything like this. We really love having people in and talking about anything, food, neighborhoods, whatever you're interested in, Brian. We're here for
it. I appreciate that about you, Brandon. I know you like to drink mezcal because we did that together 2 weeks ago at Hugo's place. This is kind of how this all came about, in a sense. So how are things? We'll start with you, Brent. Let's get a little bit of background on the National Food and Beverage Foundation. And kind of newly minted. You're newish in the job.
So this is, I guess, my fifth month, which is amazing because in some ways it feels like I just got here. In other ways, I feel like I've been here forever. But it's really a great organization. The National Food and Beverage Foundation puts food first, and we really look at food through the lens of cultural preservation and the importance of food. And everybody eats. So when you think about food and you think about beverage, it's something that we all have in common. It's something we all kind of bring from our own heritages together. And it's just a great way to connect with people over a table, over food. And I think a lot of great conversations like this are the kind that happen over a wonderful meal with people. And so we really focus on that and looking at the ways that food and culture have influenced the United States and the world.
Great. Now, there's a museum here,
The Southern Food and Beverage Museum is here in New Orleans. And inside our building, we have a few different collections. We have the Hall of the Southern States, where we have 14 Southern states represented. We also have the Museum of the American Cocktail in this building, which is an amazing collection of antique cocktail artifacts, liquor bottles from the 1800s, things from the pre-Prohibition days, all the way through to the modern era of cocktails. And then beyond our museum collections, we have a big teaching kitchen. We do a lot of programs with kids, a lot of programs with people coming in from out of town that want to learn, you know, how to cook Creole or Cajun food. So we really do a lot of things over here on OC Haley, and it's just a great neighborhood for us to be in because there's lots of people excited about what's going on over here, and we're able to kind of bring them in and show them what's going on.
Yeah, very cool. Hugo, so tell us a little bit about Casa Borrega, a very fine Mexican establishment here on Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard. Tell us about how you started it and how you got here.
Well, you know, it is ironic. I have been here in New Orleans 34 years, and I've been on the boulevard since 1999. Not as a business owner, but I have been living here since 99 in and out. When Reconcile opened, which is one of the anchors with the boulevard,
Café Reconcile,
I used to go and eat there, and the lunch used to be $3.50. And they have a gospel band playing in that time for lunch. I was an artist in that time, a visual artist. So Andy Antipas moved his gallery to the space that now is occupied with Ache Cultural Center. So that was part of the gallery, and Andy told me, you know something, this neighborhood is going to happen. This is 1999. So I rent an apartment at the Venus Gardens. I was the second tenant at the Venus Gardens in that time. Wonderful space. So after that, you know, I have a feel through the area. I used to live in the French Quarter. in that time. Mm-hmm. So my studio was here in Norita Casuheli. And I started to have a feeling for the neighborhood, for the people around. I never thought in my wildest imagination that I was going to open a Mexican restaurant like what I did. But the point is that I want to make is that I know really well the area. That's what I decide to invest, and that's why I decide to stay. Mm-hmm. So many people think that I'm part of the immigrant wave after Katrina, when the Mexicans came, when the Hondurans, when Central Americans came to work in the city. But in general, I've been getting the area since 1999 and in New Orleans for about 34 years.
Now, you actually anticipated my next question to you, Ugo, because I think a lot of people from outside the area don't know this, is that prior to Katrina, there was not a large Mexican population in New Orleans.
That's correct.
And even Mexican cuisine was not particularly that well represented in New Orleans.
That's
right?
Very true. Yeah. I mean, New Orleans culture is very, very ethnocentric, just like Spanish culture, just like Mexican culture, French culture, English culture were very, very ethnocentric. So for many years, New Orleans didn't need neither the support or the room that others, you know, there's not a great, great Chinese restaurant here.
Right. For the same
like
reason.
In San Francisco.
Right.
There's not a great, great, it used to be until two, three years ago, no barbecue.
Right.
You know, now we have barbecue spots. But anyway, point is that New Orleans is super powerful, and it's everything. You know, you want a second line, you want jazz, you want jazz festival, you want French Quarter festival, you want your pool balls, you want your étouffée. You don't want a Mexican restaurant. Everybody tell me.
Oh, I do. But
everybody tell me, Ugo, you're crazy. Orita Casuheli, Mexican food. No, don't do it. Don't do it. However, the new occupants of the city, Latin culture, not just Latin culture in New Orleans, but in the United States, the growing of Hispanic population every year is going to 34% mm-hmm. in Kenner, in Metairie, mm-hmm. In Jefferson Parish. Mm-hmm. Here in New Orleans, it's growing up to an accelerated rate of 14%.
Okay.
We're going to have more Latinos in 20 years than any other minority. And this is not just here in the city, but it's nationwide.
Nationwide.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Latinos at this point, we compromise the largest minority in the United States mm-hmm. over African-Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, I went to this Christmas party that my kitchen did, and you can see why. I saw about 19 children around. And against this political climate here or there, people is not thinking in going back soon or anything like that.
Sure.
We're making plans. This is our country, and we're very, very, very happy to represent it and to do whatever it has to be done to make America great again.
There you go. And especially here in this part of the world where I think it is very interesting, because we've had a Honduran population
Absolutely.
For a period of time, Vietnamese population for a period of time, and those cuisines are reasonably well represented, especially Vietnamese cuisine. But we see more, you know, the growth of Mexican cuisine, more Asian cuisine, things like that coming in. I think it's always an interesting question, too, when you look at these vectors for how different styles of cuisine end up in a place. If there's a local population of that group that supports it, it's quite obvious. I think it's interesting when something pops up when there's not that local group, and we see a lot of that in New Orleans, which I think is very interesting. Japanese food is a really good example, I think. But Brent, let me ask you this question here about with the National Food and Beverage Foundation and the museum, because part of what if I understand correctly, the mission is here of the museum is to represent a broad array and diversity of cultures and culinary styles and things that connect to that.
Sure. And the South, I think, even in the popular mind today, feels very black and white. And that completely sort of misunderstands what the South has always been, because the South has some of the most dynamic cities in the country and has for the last 40 years. And you're talking Houston, if it's in the greater South, Florida in the greater South, Northern Virginia is in the greater South. And those are some of the most diverse places in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And to think about Southern food is just sort of, well, there was, you know, this ethnic group and that ethnic group really overlooks the influence of, like you said, the number of Asian immigrants to the South who have been able to bring their cuisine. The large numbers in Louisiana of Italians, you know, it's not just French people, where, again, that sort of becomes less talked about. Mm-hmm. There is some wonderful Indian food in truck stops off the side of the road in places like Mississippi and Tennessee. The unbelievable in Mississippi, the things with the corn on the inside. tamales.
Oh, tamales. Yeah,
yes,
yeah, sure.
And then, I mean, it's amazing. Yeah, you would not think that North Mississippi would be a place that's an unbelievable cuisine.
That was kind of the vector of tamales, I believe, in New Orleans,
yes,
right?
Yes, I think they really came from Mississippi.
The river,
right?
Yeah.
Right. They came from downriver rather than, you know, their ancestral home.
Yeah.
And then going beyond that, the drinking traditions and the beverage traditions in the South, where, you know, it's not, there's no one sort of way of drinking. There's no one way. There's beer from everywhere. There's alcohol from everywhere. The mountain South versus the coastal South is dramatically different.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we really like to do is put into context that, you know, yes, there's the traditional things that you know and think about, you know, okra coming from Africa, or in the rice coming from, you know, the Carolinas, mm-hmm. you know, those places where they're sort of indicative things. But it really is much broader than that. It's much wider than that. And we want
Native Americans
and Native Americans as well, certainly. And so we try to do our best to give each state its due, but then within that, really sort of explain how did these foodways come to be and what were the populations that moved from here to there and brought their traditions with them or expanded their traditions. And there's a really neat anecdote about barbecue that I will indulge in, where the Carolina style of barbecue is really just one person's style of barbecue, mm-hmm. but that pitmaster trained about a dozen people, and then they trained each about a dozen people. And over 100 years, you can see one style of one person turn into a statewide thing. Mm-hmm. And it's that history, I think, that's just fascinating. And the South is full of those stories because it's not as much of a static sort of this is what it's always been in the imagination of outsiders. The South has always been dynamic, always been full of different people, and you can really see it in the food today in a way that if you're looking.
That's where it's probably most well represented, right? Is through our food. Is a really
right.
good, it's,
and I think
a,
the food,
it's a good way to
food,
tell the story.
The music and
yes.
really, I mean, American culture is in a lot of ways from the South. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you think about some of our big touchstones, rock music, a lot of our food, a lot of the things that people associate, you know, most as American culture is coming from the South, and it's been taken up north as people have migrated back this way and that. But it's an amazing sort of legacy that the South has that I think gets overlooked. And once you put it all in one building and can see the connections between the states and the people and the food, it really gives you a nice context for why Southern food is important.
Yeah, good one. Well, let's do this, you guys. Let's take a little break here on the show. We're going to pause for a commercial break, and we're going to come back, talk a little bit further. We'll get into a little bit more about the neighborhood or at the Castle Haley, talk a little bit more about the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, talk a little bit more about Casa Bodega, and hopefully Pepper Bowen, our pal from the Culinary Center here, will join us, but she's out canvassing, now, I'm guessing. But we're going to take a little break.
We'll take a break from knocking on doors.
Oh, that's it, exactly. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. Come on back. Welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here. Thanks for listening in, friends, this week. As always, we are here at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum on Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard, and we're talking about the museum, and we're talking about the neighborhood in general. We kind of got a little bit of a background on the museum with Brent Rosen and Hugo Montero, who operates Casa Bodega, the fine Mexican restaurant here on the street. But let's start there, Hugo, with you. So you opened up the restaurant when, and tell us a little bit about that, and then tell us sort of what we established the fact that there wasn't a large Mexican population pre-Katrina here. So what did it mean to you to open up Casa Bodega, and what were you trying to accomplish when you did it at the time, other than just, you know, serving good food?
Right. Well, this was more like a project, and I always say that. Yeah, I'm not coming from a restaurant background. And I don't cook myself. I'm not coming from a restaurant background. I never worked in a restaurant in my life. And again, like everybody was telling me, Aretha Castro Haley, Mexican food, you don't cook, you never work in a restaurant? I say, no, but, you know, I'm not afraid. I saw some places, somewhere else here in the city. I think I can do better. I have respect. I have respect for everybody. This is a very hard business, and everybody else deserves my biggest respect.
Well, let me ask you this question, Hugo, and I know you're being nice about it, but I think, and let's just be honest, the bar was pretty low, I think, for a while, right? I don't think we had a lot of diversity and quality Mexican food.
No. And you know, everything has to do with socioeconomics. When in France, the first restaurants were open, they were open because the cooks, they work for the royalty. They work for the king, and they work for the queen and for the dukes and all that. So somehow the French Revolution came, and all these cooks, all these wonderful cooks, they went to town, and they opened little places, and from 34 restaurants that they opened first, there were 740 in the second year, and like that. Right now, after Katrina, we have about new Mexican restaurants that they open. After me.
Wow.
After me.
Yeah.
You know, which is crazy. Crazy. We don't have many New Orleans restaurants opening, but now we have a lot of ethnic Peruvian, Honduran, Colombian, Venezuelan. Just right now that opens is Chilean in the West Bank.
More Cuban.
Yeah, Cuban, you know. So that diversity that Brian was talking about it in the cities in the South is happening in New Orleans now. It did not happen before Katrina, as you say. That's a very good point. The bar wasn't too high. Now it is. It is. So
we see the landscape changing.
Pretty ironic, pretty contradictory, you know, in many ways.
Right.
But it's happening. 10 Mexican restaurants after Katrina in Orleans Parish. That's such.
Yeah, to some people that may not sound like a lot, but that's huge here.
That will never happen. There is a flea market under the bridge on Algiers, going in the Crescent City Connection, and it's all Hispanic.
Got it.
99% Hispanic. Just go there on a Sunday. It's crazy. I mean, you don't think you are in New Orleans. You think you are in Houston, or you think you are in Los Angeles, but not in New Orleans.
So we've had a celebrity walk-on here just join us. Miss Pepper Bowen has popped in. How are you, Pepper? Good to see you.
I'm doing well, Brian. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing really good. It's been a little while.
It has.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sad to say that I don't spend nearly enough time talking about drinks. So I'm happy to be here today.
Well, that's good. Well, we talk about food, drink, culture, you know, all that kind of stuff. So we try and diversify here a little bit. But, well, we'll get to you a little bit further on kind of what you're up to in a second. But since we're kind of in the midst of conversation right now, do me a favor, tell us a little bit about Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard and give us the background on who Aretha Castle Haley was, if you would.
Wow, so I should have, this is all coming off the top of my head. So
I know you can do it because you've told me the story before on the show.
So Aretha Castle Haley was an activist. She got involved with, I can't remember if it was CORE or SNCC, but it was one of the civil rights movements because of her older sister. And they were folks who were super invested in voting rights as well as, you know, just generic civil rights. Her mother was reportedly either a waitress or barmaid over at Dickie Chase's. And in her house, Aretha Castle's house, Virgie Castle, Virgie Castle's house, was a small house where they were known to have folks just setting up pallets on the floor. They'd clean up over at Mrs. Castle's house and then head over to Dickie Chase's, not only to eat, but also to organize. Famously, Leah Chase would say that they couldn't come in dirty and disheveled. So, Miss Aretha, passed away. I want to say she was in her 40s, like 48 or 47. She had a cancer. But before she did, she was an icon in New Orleans. And so Dryades, which is what this street used to be, was renamed in part after her. Dryades Street was famously the Black Canal Street because of segregation. Black people were not permitted to shop on Canal Street. In fact, they also could not work on Canal Street, which was a whole other conversation, but I can't recall when the street was changed, when the name of the street was changed, but Aretha Castle married Frank Haley, whom she had met as an organizer, and they lived happily ever after.
Very good. Thank you for I put you on the spot right there, but thank you for
that was
that was great. Yeah, that,
well,
fantastic.
I'm glad it was accurate because that was just off the top of my head.
Well, it was really good because you know we wanted to frame kind of the setting that we were in here,
absolutely,
and why it's an important neighborhood. And well, Pepper, carry on just a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about why is this such, beyond the historical the name. And that significance, why is this an important neighborhood in your view to the city?
Well, so I am founding director of Culinaria Center for Food Law Policy and Culture. And Central City is, well, kind of in the center of town. It is a little bit lower lying than some of the areas that are closer, not by much, but a little bit lower lying than some of the areas that are closer to the river. And that means that when the city was first settled, that this was one of the places that was expanded to. It would also have been at the time, as you know, unpleasant as it may sound, since it is a little bit lower lying, it would have been one of the areas where there had been always black people occupying the space. So the slave owners' homes or the plantation owners would have been situated closest to the river. And then as you get into the swamplands and farther into where you actually grow things is where you would find not only the slave cabins but also the crops themselves. Right. Most people think that it's exactly the other way around because you would need your water source in order to irrigate the crops. But that's not the way that it works because the river is a natural embankment. The folks who have been in Central City, in large part, have been here for generations. These are folks who, with or without connection to slavery, have been homeowners. They have raised families here. Even after the Amtrak station, the Union Station came in and there was a forced migration to other parts of town. Even after the parts of the Claiborne Overpass were constructed and more forced migration to other parts of town, even after the public housing developments that are over here on Martin Luther King Jr. and a little bit up here over at on St. Thomas, these are folks who have invested and been invested in the neighborhood and in the community. I mean, we even talk about the, and I'm sure at some point somebody either has or will talk about the how this the space where we are right now was a market, and the folks who shopped here were coming at that point. They were coming from other parts of town, but Central City in and of itself has historically been a black neighborhood, and the transition that is slow going at this moment has really come post Katrina. The there are a lot of musicians that are from this area. The Black Masking Indians live over here. We are also famous, we being Central City, we're almost also famous for being the community from which most of the inmates from Orleans Parish Prison come, but that's a different conversation altogether.
Right?
So says a lot to our policing and the environmental contaminants, but that's, again, something else. The reasons that Aretha Castle Haley in and of itself is important is because Dryad Street, way back when, was the street, again, where you could actually do shopping as a black person. There was a one of the McDonough schools was over here where black people could go to school and be educated without having to worry about integration or, you know, being ostracized because they were not. Because they were black. And some of the transitions that have occurred over here are great. Others, not so much. But but still, a really lovely space. If you got a chance to walk down the street and you see some of the old tiles or even some of the old sketches of the reliefs of what used to be here, really pretty amazing.
Absolutely. Well, let's do that. Thank you for sharing all that because that gave us a nice little summary. We're going to take a little break here on the show. We're going to chat a little bit more about the neighborhood in the next segment. And then these three are going to stick around for another shot with Noel Drinks. Be right back, friends. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. We're talking about Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard here in Central City, New Orleans. And, Brittany, you haven't talked in a while, so let me throw it out to you for a second here. But, you know, what's going on here in this neighborhood? Why, for both locals and visitors, why do you want to come here? The museum and just other things.
Well, I think you get a real slice of New Orleans that is authentically itself. This neighborhood has a lot of different people in it, a lot of different organizations, and a lot of different stuff happening, but it's all very real stuff. And that's not to say that you don't have a real experience in the French Quarter or a real experience in other parts of town, but you can come here and talk to the people who are on the street, and they're all involved in the neighborhood. They're all doing things. Everybody here is really excited about the opportunities on OC Haley and in Central City. And there's a lot of room to experiment here, which is nice. There's different things that people are working on that might be too expensive in other parts of town to be able to pull off. Or, you know, you might not have the space that we have. And as people have mentioned, Pepper and Hugo both, that there this was a major shopping street. And so we still have the building stock that was a bunch of department stores. And now they're being turned into all kinds of things. We were at one time a grocery store. And now we are a big museum. But, you know, there weren't a whole lot of 20,000 square foot wide open steel girder buildings in New Orleans. And we have those because this is the part of town that was built, you know, when they were making things larger and really trying to accommodate lots of people in the city. And, you know, as far as the museum itself goes, I mean, we're always doing all kinds of different things here. We have cooking classes. We have events. We have our museum that's open 6 days a week. And, I mean, if you want to find out more about that, you know, feel free to visit our website. It's natfab.org, and you can see all the things that we're up to. And we'll be doing some expanding ourselves. We're about to finish out our backyard area. And following that, we're going to install a podcast studio for folks like yourself who are on our network.
Me, really?
Yeah, like okay. you. Oh, yes, really? You know, okay. even you, Brian. And then following that, you know, I think we have some other kind of exciting things we'll be doing into next year. But we're really excited about being part of the neighborhood and working with the other groups who are here. And, you know, there's a lot of other nonprofits on our street. And I'll plug those because they're not at the table with us. But we have a number of great organizations over here who are doing the real work of making New Orleans a better, more exciting, more inclusive place. Mm-hmm. And between us and the Youth Empowerment Project, the folks at Cafe Reconcile, who we mentioned, the New Orleans Jazz Orchestra, and then just a number of others are on the street doing lots of great work. And so, you know, if you haven't been checking out what's going on here, take a look, because it's the future of New Orleans, and it's very exciting to be a part of it.
And representative of New Orleans.
And representative of New Orleans,
truly. A great point. Ugo, let me ask you this question, because in your case, as somebody who, I'll call you a pioneer in this instance of sort of this wave of what's gone on in this neighborhood, and obviously we know that this is generational and things have changed. Why do you want people to come here? And, you know, as you put your stake in this neighborhood, what attracts you to it, and why do you want people to come see you and everything else that's happening here? And we know it's tough, right?
Yeah, lately there's too much trend about being authentic, you know, being legit. I mean, I'm telling you, again, I've been here in New Orleans 34 years, and Aretha Gasuheli really epitomized a beautiful slice of New Orleans. I live in the Quarter 10 years, so I know where the Quarter is. I live in the Garden District, I live in Mid-City, I live in Bayou St. John, I live in the Marigny, I live in the Bywater, you know. Now I live above my business, and you cannot get as real as Aretha Gasuheli in New Orleans. The New York Times came here, that was like 4 years ago, and they did a little piece about the street. The Southern Museum was mentioned. We were mentioned, Casa Borrega was mentioned, and it's because the authenticity factor, body balding, just to walk the streets, you know. Professor Longhair is two blocks down the street.
A lot of the musicians we
I
know
mean, you're talking about seminal New Orleans music. Mm-hmm. You know, I have respect for Tremé, and some other neighborhoods, you know, but the Mardi Gras Indian crews down the street on Dry Street, they're the real thing. You see National Geographic, the New York Times on Mardi Gras Day, just very, very few that they can see what real New Orleans is. We have right now experiencing the fear of New Orleans being gentrified and losing the character thanks to new immigrants, newcomers, transplants. I don't like that word, you know, but anyway, transplants. People who just came here. But, you know, if you want to experience an authentic slice of New Orleans life, it's still Central City is like, it's the real thing.
That's
the real McCoy.
There you go. And this is a topic we've talked about on the show before, and we'll do again. I think a lot of people don't realize how many musicians we're talking about, traditional New Orleans musicians, mm-hmm. grew up in this neighborhood in Central City. And some of their houses are still there.
Sidney
Bechamp.
They need to
be protected. Yeah. But that's a topic for another time.
That's another topic, too.
We got about 3 minutes left before we close out the portion of the radio show. Pepper, why would you give us maybe sort of what would be your perspective of why people should come here?
So Central City in and of itself is really quite lovely, right? So it's got the architecture of uptown. It has a feel of an old-time neighborhood where you can walk and you know your neighbors. You used to be able to walk to a grocery store, different conversation. Where there's a wide range of types of people who are here, whether it is that we're talking about the guest homes where you have the elderly who are living, or new families that are building and renovating in parts of the area, where you have the New Orleans Mission that is a couple blocks down from here, and you also have these massive homes that are over on Jackson Avenue that are just astounding in not only size but price. So it's a pretty wide range, and you also have the culture bearers who remain in this neighborhood because they own and because they've not been pushed out with the transitions for whatever reasons that we have the transitions, and they can continue to tell the stories of what used to be here and how it used to work. I am not from Central City. My family lived farther uptown because my grandma was actually part of that forced migration. They used to live over not too far from the Union Station, and so when she moved farther uptown, her church still stayed down here, and on Sundays, when I was dragged to Sunday school against my will, we would stop by or pass by the Leidenheimer bread bakery. And to this day, baking French bread reminds me of her and of Sunday morning church. And so does the Commodore's Easy Like Sunday Morning. Different story.
That's a different story.
So Central City, I think, is a place where if you are coming to visit and have no intention of staying here and changing the way that things look and work and feel, that this is a great place to come and experience all of the things that New Orleans has been over time, because you can even see in the architecture the evolutions that have happened. And so for me, that would be one of the reasons. I mean, we've even got a couple commercial gardens that are around the way, and a shared working space. And so there are a lot of different types of businesses, as Brent was saying, that are operating here in Central City. And for me and my purposes, the whole idea of community and inclusion is very, very present here.
Awesome. Thank you. Do me a favor. Tell people where they can find the Culinaria Center. And tell us. You're a political aspirant right now, so.
Well, that's a different conversation.
That's a different conversation.
Not why we're here
too,
today.
Fair enough.
So Culinaria Center, culinariacenter.org, is Culinaria Center for Food Law, Policy, and Culture. A special place in my heart does Central City live, mainly because it's where we've got one of the hotbeds for lead poisoning, and also far more information than you want right now. But short version, long story, is that lead exposure in children causes increased blood lead levels, which mimics as ADHD and creates other problems downstream. So.
And running for political office, state rep, District 91.
You
can say that. All right, cool. Because we got about 30 seconds left, so vote for Pepper. Hey, you know my political bent. I'm cool saying that. It's my show. I can do what I want. Brent, one more time, where do we find the museum?
Netfab.org, and we are at 1504 Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard.
Awesome. Hugo, where can we find Casa Bodega?
Casa Bodega, 1719 Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard, New Orleans, 70113. Casa Borrega, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Casa Borrega.
Awesome. And a great mezcal selection. I'm going to plug that.
We're top 10 mezcal bar in the country.
Awesome. And that's
nice.
Something. That
is they do
something.
Good live music, too.
They
I'll tell
do.
You that.
Yeah, they do.
And we do a lot of Latin music. You
awesome.
Know.
You guys, I got to end this portion here real quick. These guys are sticking around for another shot with NOLA Drinks. So remember to be kind to one another, use your turn signal, and until next time, cheers, y'all.
All these saints and all these sinners will try.
Yep, another Shot with Noel Drinks. Everybody, thanks for sticking around for this one. Hope you are enjoying our conversation here with Pepper, Brent, and Ugo. We're going to continue the conversation here in just a second, and then I'll be back with my parting shot. Here we go. All right, everybody, up another Shot with Noel Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for sticking around. We're here at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, as you know, and we wrap things up rather quickly on the radio portion of the show, which we have to do because people make us do those things. But now we're in the people. They. Yeah,
you don't want to get behind on the radio.
No, you don't. People get they frown upon that. Mm-hmm. They just cut it off. But here we do the podcast only thing where we don't get cut off because, well, I just get to hit record and stop, and it's kind of how that works. So we're talking about the Rethercastle Haley neighborhood, y'all, and I'd kind of throw it out to you, just one general question. We can all just kind of organically build on this. We've talked about, I think, pretty well why it's important to come to this neighborhood, why this neighborhood is important. Maybe pull up a little bit from there, and one of the things that we want to feature in the NOLA neighborhood segment is understanding how much of the culture and economic importance on all kinds of levels comes from neighborhoods that are not called the French Quarter. And I'm not bagging on the French Quarter. This is not the idea here. But the idea is, I think a lot of people, we were talking about musicians, we were talking about food, we were talking about populations that work the hospitality and service industry, which basically is the bedrock of the conversations, don't live in those areas. They live outside. No. So why are these neighborhoods, and why, you know, we can use the Rethercastle Haley as an example, why are these neighborhoods so important to New Orleans? Where do we want to start? Big question, I know, but where do we want to start?
Lot.
And we've
that's
touched on some of it, but, you know, why?
I mean, I'll jump in just because I had a first reaction, and it was because it's where New Orleans comes from.
Yeah.
And I think that that's sort of, like, whenever you think of New Orleans and you have your idea of, I don't know, what is in the common mind of New Orleans, you know, like it's in air quotes or whatever, most of that is coming from neighborhoods like this, where it's where the culture comes from, it's where the things are born, it's where they live. And then, you know, what tourists see or people who are not, you know, visiting the different corners of New Orleans, you know, this is New Orleans. This is where it is. I guess it bubbles up from here to the rest.
Mm-hmm. But it's not, and I think you're absolutely accurate. We want to make sure too that we're clear. It's not just say residential though, right?
I mean, there are things to see, things to do.
There's hospitality in this neighborhood. There's obviously your place, Ugo.
Well, you know, New York has Wall Street. San Francisco has the Silicon Valley. New Orleans has restaurants, 1,800 restaurants. I mean, the compendium, the number of restaurants, hospitality, service, is just amazing. When you come to Central City, you have 3-4 places where you are, I have to say, like, above the standards of tourism in New Orleans, you know. Again, back to the real thing, back to a more relaxed environment. Casa Borrega, for example, we employ 16 people there. And I give work to musicians that any other house, they will not have work because we base our genre with Latin. You know, we do bossa nova, we do flamenco, salsa, we do a lot of Brazilian. But by the way, tomorrow is the Brazilian day at Casa Borrega. I have a street festival.
This will have been about a week and a half ago, but you're going to do that. Is that an annual thing?
Yeah, okay. Okay. And we do the Day of the Dead, the biggest Cinco de Mayo in the city. So attracting the whole cultural class, you know, because New Orleans has a huge cultural class. You know, we have intellectuals, we have writers, we have dancers, we have playwriters, we have talent on radio, we have artists, we're a city of artists. At the same time, we don't make the same money as New York or San Francisco, but the people is highly sophisticated and they want to enjoy themselves. So that's why hospitality is so big. We spend money in other restaurants. I do personally. I support many other restaurants, you know, and any kind of food, not just Latin food. I think it's important that areas like these are providing a different experience from what you find in the original, regular, you know, I love Commanders, but like Commanders or Dominica or Bacchanal, which are always my favorites. But this represents a and out of the bubble and out of the frame and out of the water experience.
Not day to day New Orleans. Exactly. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, I'm there in Casa Borrega. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm cleaning and people don't know that I'm the owner. You are not going to see that in New Orleans restaurants. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're not going to see the chef or the owner there cleaning or like, I'm there mm-hmm. all the time because I live above my business. So that, I mean, I'm speaking about myself. I'm there. I try to please my customers. I try to give a personal attention. I try to give something that I think there's no place like Casa Borrega in the whole city. You know, we're a top tail mezcal bar. We are a legit live music venue, and we are a bona fide restaurant. Mm-hmm. But I'm there. You go to the quarter, I told you, I live in the quarter, I go to many places in the quarter, you're not going to find the owner there, you're not going to find the chef there, you are not going to find that particular thing, el yo no sé qué, that somebody's looking in a pop's mom restaurant.
It's the neighborhood. People live there and they spend their time there.
Yeah.
Well, and Pepper, let me ask you that question then, that sort of broader question about these neighborhoods like Central City, like Bayou Road, like Treme, like Irish Channel, that, and as Brent said, that so many, you know, we know the culture of the city is really built on these neighborhoods mm-hmm. that a lot of people don't go to. But if you live here and there's life here, there are things to do here. You don't just come here and crash. There's stuff happening here. Meaning go to bed. Well, I mean, some people do probably. But
well, so Central City has managed to maintain its look and feel of a neighborhood, which is something that, despite the fact that there are people who live in the quarter has not managed to do. And so folks like coming up this way because it does have that, je ne sais quoi, that you can sort of flow from day to night, that it's easy enough to get to other areas of town. And so in the bustling illegal Airbnbs that, you know, stay up here and then, you know, it's a quick jaunt down to the quarter. You can even find some really great places to go for drinks, either over here on O.C. Haley or over on St. Charles. And it's also, you know, it's within walking distance of a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And so the culture that remains in large part is because we still have Black people here. Mm-hmm. So no matter how it is that you feel about the transitioning neighborhood, the bottom line is that the culture that folks come here for is largely based on the African diaspora, that whether it be drums or trumpets or horns or whatever the case might happen to be, even Black masking Indians, these are things that folks want to see, even though, well, all right, so they're rebranding as Mardi Gras Indians. And so the bottom line is that where you find areas where there is now you're sort of confused about what the culture actually is and whether it's a neighborhood or whether it's commercial, that is because you look at the populations and mm-hmm. that'll give you a pretty generic idea of what is going on and why it is that there are questions.
Mm-hmm. Great. Brent, with the museum. So being a part of the neighborhood, I know it's not necessarily the mission is directly connected to the neighborhood, but what do you guys look to here in this neighborhood to draw from? I know that's kind of like a big question, but you got a lot of stuff in your backyard. How do you pull that in, and how do you integrate as a citizen and as a neighbor? Here?
Sure. The thing I keep telling everybody is we're not doing anything alone anymore. There will be no the Southern Food and Beverage Museum presents. It will be the Southern Food and Beverage Museum and blank. Present because there's one preaching to the choir doesn't, you know, that's not helping anybody. And we do want to get more people aware of what we do, but also we have a platform that there's lots of room on. And as we mentioned, it's the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. And there is a lot of beverage and food culture in this neighborhood. You had mentioned, you know, that there were a lot of people who worked in the restaurants living here.
Oh yeah.
There were also some iconic bars and restaurants in this neighborhood that may not be here anymore, but their history is really important. Mm-hmm. And we've worked as an organization with a lot of the other groups on our street on an initiative to make Central City feel more accessible. And right now the neighborhood is sort of cut off, like we mentioned. There were some urban renewal projects that, whether they did it on purpose or not, really did cut this part of town off from the rest. And even though it's only three blocks from St. Charles Avenue and MLK Boulevard, it feels further. And when I tell people it's three blocks, they look at me like I'm crazy. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's got to be eight or nine. I'm like, nope, it's three.
Three
from Voodoo Barbecue, and you're here. And so, and then coming from the other way, you know, again, you're only five blocks from the Superdome. But in people's minds, this neighborhood feels a little more disjointed. Mm. And so what we're really working on with the neighborhood is to sort of make Central City feel more connected to everywhere. And I think in doing that, that also then connects us to everybody in the neighborhood. And, mm-hmm. you know, we've all talked a little bit about how this is a more of an ownership neighborhood. It's not a neighborhood that, you know, there's a lot of renters who are being pushed out as much as it's a neighborhood that's changing. But it's changing in a way that I think the neighborhood will at least have some input in, which is better than has happened to a lot of neighborhoods where people weren't big owners and there wasn't that culture of long-time ownership. And so it's really, I think, interesting to see how, you know, a neighborhood can really control its own destiny a little bit, given the situation that we have here, where it will be, I think, more what the neighborhood wants as opposed to what developers want or what the tourists want.
Right.
Because we're not in a place that's going to get some gigantic development that's suddenly going to change everything.
Well, we've got to keep, as Pepper just said, we've got to keep our fingers crossed,
Because,
You know, I think this is kind of the point that I wanted to make during this segment is that these are the neighborhoods that tell the story of New Orleans and are really so much of the fabric of New Orleans. And if we lose that, we're losing what makes New Orleans New Orleans.
Well, and there's one other thing. I was at the Louisiana Tourism Association. Sorry, I was at the Louisiana Tourism Association conference last week. And one of the big topics is over-tourism. And Pepper, you mentioned the Airbnbs and how that sort of, you know, Treme has a 400-unit hotel laying on its side across that whole neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's as big as any of the biggest hotels downtown. Mm-hmm. That's not talked about much. But there's not much you can do with New Orleans first-time visitors other than, say, enjoy the quarter. Because you're not going to come to New Orleans for your first time and not see Bourbon Street, not go to Pato's, not do all that stuff. But it's your second visit, your third visit. It's the times where you've really fallen in love with New Orleans. What you've fallen in love with is out here. And it's how do we get the people who love New Orleans for the right reasons, seeing the New Orleans that they love. Mm. And it was really interesting for me to listen to the tourism industry basically saying, you know, we have too much of a good thing in parts of this town and nowhere near enough in others.
In other parts. This is a really good point, Brandon. Actually, thank you for saying this because this is kind of the impetus for this series, Nolan Neighborhoods, is the idea that when people, especially listeners outside the area, we all know this because we live here. When you meet somebody who's here for the first time, you probably met him in the French Quarter,
sure.
Or maybe you met him uptown. And then it's like, and then there are certain establishments, and I won't name names, but I used to sit there and I'll be like, where are you from? Because everybody's from here or lives here. And then they'll go, I'm from so-and-so. And I go, well, this has got to be your fifth time in New Orleans, because otherwise you wouldn't be sitting in this place.
Yeah.
And I think certain things have changed a little bit, but I think that that's why we're doing this segment, is that we want people, if very much as you well said, if people fall in love with the city, understanding where that love really comes from and the people that bring you that love.
Here.
Yeah, and I, you know, so thank you for saying
that.
No,
I mean, it's not my idea as much as it's something that made me think a lot after this conference. You know, that's a really interesting point. Because it's you're beating your head against the wall trying to beat the French Quarter.
Yeah, and
but
that's not
but you
the
can
point.
Certainly, and it's not the point.
Yeah.
But it's how do you make it easy and accessible for people that want more to get there and find what they're looking for?
I think that's
great. That's fair. But I do have a question. I mean, does it make sense that we should be commercializing a residential neighborhood? Does a residential neighborhood need tourism? If we are looking at just, you know, my block and me and, you know, Miss Alice who lives across the street, do we really need folks visiting, right, in air quotes, per se?
Sure.
Or is that something that should be relegated to an area that's got commercial business?
I guess I'm speaking as a museum in the neighborhood.
Gotcha.
Saying
okay.
That I would love to have more people coming here.
Fair.
But there's lots to see other than me.
Well, and that's
I guess is the point, is that it would be, I don't want people to come here just so they pay their $10 admission fee and then get back in an Uber and leave.
Yeah, and this is
come here and then go see what Hugo's up to, go see what Ashe is up to, and make a day of
other businesses.
Right.
Gotcha.
Now look,
okay.
And let me say this, and Hugo, I'm going to bounce it to you in a second, and Pepper, you raise a really good point. I mean, this is stuff, my educational background, I'll spare everybody this because they've probably heard me say it on the show enough, you know, is I have a strong background in ecotourism. And this goes way back when. That question that you just asked is the same question. And, you know, is there a balance between economic stimulus from outside sources versus maintaining integrity of a neighborhood and these sorts of things and authentic experiences, as we've talked about. And sometimes that can kind of be bullshit. I think we know that too. But, you know, these are age old questions. And I think, you know, New Orleans is a city based on tourism, and I'm not going to editorialize here too much. Where do we find that balance where people are also not being taken advantage of and benefiting from the from tourism dollars in a way that's not exploitive? And I have no answers for that. I'm just saying I think that's a really important question in all of this.
That's a much longer conversation.
It's a whole other conversation. But Hugo, let me ask you this question, because I like one term that Brent used, is talking about making Central City more accessible. And in your case, maybe you could speak to this too, is that not only physically accessible, but maybe even what we're talking about here, telling the story, to make sure that the history and the story and the people that live here and the people that have worked to establish themselves as you have in the neighborhood, that part needs to be accessible as well, right?
Let me recap two things. You know, I agree totally with the statement that the New Orleans culture is black. I mean, whoever denies that is either blind or, you know. The African diaspora is what has cities like New Orleans a living entity. And I mean, I'm not going to say that everything is black in New Orleans, but the culture, jazz. Mm-hmm. You know, there's painters around the world, you know, Velázquez, Picasso, Botticelli. There's nobody like Miles Davis or John Coltrane. It's going to be frank, all over the world. Nobody can compete with African-American jazz players. And New Orleans, therefore, is the birthplace of jazz. Mm-hmm. And all these traditions, like the African diaspora, it suits in Central City. I mean, you know, I live here, so sometimes out of the blue, I see a funeral. I've been seeing so many. You know, I haven't seen so many people get so excited about. So when is going to happen a jazz funeral? Well, whenever the person
somebody's
dies,
somebody's got
to
die.
Somebody has to die. So I can't really tell you, sir. You know, I cannot really tell you when somebody's going to die. Like a famous musician, let me see in my magic ball that, you know, I can't really tell you that. But
well,
I see
if you have
a lot.
Magic ball. I want the lottery number.
Yeah, I know. You know. Yeah. So you know, let me recap that. So Central City really suits African American history, and you know, many people like the idea to live in an African American city, but it's totally different when, you know, when a neighborhood starts to be gentrified and your neighbors are black. And I mean, I live here.
Yeah.
I live here since 99.
Okay, but to my question, then I think we're kind of getting there, right? Is that this is part of the story that needs to be accessible
so people
understand the neighborhood.
I think everything supposed to have a real balance, you know. We say in Spanish, ni tan tan, ni tampoco poco, you know. We need to have a balance between the people who live here, who has been living here for generations, and obviously the stimulation, the economic stimulation that you need as a business owner. My clients, they are not from Central City. My clients, the only reason because I have been surviving is because I'm there trying to promote myself everywhere, and people from Metairie, from, you know, from Slidell, from Lakeview, from uptown, the French Quarter, they come and see Borrega. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the only way how I have been surviving myself, you know. This is not like Ferret, where your resident base really helps all the business around.
Right.
Borrega has been surviving only 6 years now because the people who come out of, you know, New Orleans, I would like to have a few tourists. I'm not sure if I want to have the kind of tourism that you have on Bourbon Street or on Frenchman Street. And I agree in that way with her. Like, you know, do I really want that? Do I really want all these people trying to find a wet shirt contest, you know, with hurricanes?
How did we get here?
I'm not sure. I was talking about making the story accessible in the neighborhood, and then we got the little t-shirt.
I mean, you know, I don't really want
that much
that.
Time on Bourbon Street.
Yeah, so. Right. That story is very accessible. Yeah. You can just Google that, Brent.
Yeah, so answer. You know, I think we really need boundaries, and we really need to equal both, you know, what want some tourism, some, you know, I have ideas. That's another topic too.
Right,
and
right.
we have been talking to the neighborhood association about it to make this more cultural. You know, there is this area in London that I love. It's called Shoreditch. Mm-hmm. It used to be an Indian area. Now it's all gentrified. It makes so much money, but it loses the character. Mm-hmm. As a resident here, I don't want that. But I would like to have some stimulation.
There you go. Good.
Period.
Thank you. Yeah, we've seen that happen in a lot of places. Oakland, where I come from, is a good example of that. Pepper, any last short thoughts here real quick before we go? Where do we find the Culinaria Center? You can always just tell us that again.
Culinaria Center, www.culinariacenter.org.
Oh, very well done. Okay, thank you. Brent, where do we find that?
I was practicing that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
We're going to cut that into a spot. Brent, where do we find the museum?
The museum is www.natfab.org. We're also on Instagram and Facebook, National Food and Beverage Foundation. We are the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in New Orleans. It's our most sort of publicly accessible thing, 1504 Aretha Castle Haley in Central City.
Awesome.
info@casaborrega.com, 1719 Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard.
Thank you, Hugo. I appreciate it. Thank you all for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank
you. Interesting conversation.
Great conversation.
We'll do it again. Sorry we had to kind of rush through some things. Actually, we really didn't, but we kind of did. So we'll
circle back. The audience doesn't realize it.
No, they don't.
We took no breaks. We talked for 40
and you're
straight.
Very exactly. Good, Brian. You're very good.
Well, thank you so much.
No, not really.
You're very kind. You're all very kind.
I told you that I work in radio.
Yeah, you did. You told me that. You've
You're
done all
really
kinds
good.
Of stuff.
Yeah, I know. anything but a politician and 9 to 5. Anything else. I can do anything. All right. I can do anything, but
on that note, we're going to close things out, friends.
You know? Okay. The politician. Wish you good luck. I love to see women like in power. Do you know that Mexico has more women in Congress than anybody in the Western Hemisphere?
I did not know that.
Yes.
All right, so hold on, y'all, because we're still actually taping. Okay. So let me close this portion, friends, and we're going to take a break here. Ugo's going to educate us on all kinds of more stuff we need to know after we close out this segment. Be back with my parting shot. All right, everybody, thanks for listening into the show. Friends, I do appreciate it this week, as always. Hope you enjoyed our second installment of the NOLA Neighborhoods series on Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard. You know, obviously one of the connected themes here is tourism, and it's something that we've talked about here on the show in times past and we'll continue to talk about in times moving forward. Now, I know this isn't unique to New Orleans, but it's not all that common, I'm sure, around the planet. Here in this city, our single largest economic sector is tourism. It is our biggest economic engine. We are talking about hundreds of millions of dollars a year and millions of visitors a year. We also throw in the idea that locals do the sort of staycation thing here, because part of why a lot of us want to live here is exploring the culture in our own backyard. Now, not necessarily in the purview of this segment, but I want to mention this because it's important. Didn't give you specific figures on the latest tourism numbers. There's a little bit of a conversation going on a larger level. It's been going on for a long time about how tourism numbers are derived. So in an academic sense, not just talking about New Orleans. For example, do we count full-service restaurants? A lot of metrics don't count full-service restaurants. But here, I think it's very important because it's part of our tourism economy. What we sell here is we sell culture, right? We sell food, we sell drink, we sell art, we sell history, architecture, music, these sorts of things. This is why people come to New Orleans. So putting a little bit of that aside about how these numbers are counted academically and then how they're counted in the city, it varies a little bit in who uses what numbers and why. But the important point here is these numbers do matter quite a bit because, as I mentioned, it's our largest economic segment. And a lot of the monies that then flow towards promoting New Orleans tourism are based on the numbers of tourists that visit and the amount of dollars they spend,
right? If you follow me, sort of a self-reinforcing cycle. So those numbers matter, not splicing that here, but I want you to understand that dynamic that supporting an industry that is so important as tourism is derived from the performance of tourism in our economy. Now, one of the things that happens because we are so dependent on tourism here in New Orleans, there are issues that come up. We lack a diversification in our economy. I think a lot of people would agree with me that for the overall long-term health of New Orleans, we need a broader-based economy than just depending on tourism. That dependence can create problems. It's sort of like monocropping. Another significant problem here or issue that is in the conversation and something we need to address, and more or less what I want to talk about here, is this idea of sustainable tourism and how it relates to this part of the world. As I mentioned, we sell culture, and it can be pretty firmly argued here and correctly argued here that so many of the people that create the culture don't see the benefits from the culture. It's in the conversation. I think we're trying to work on it, and there are no easy answers here. But sustainable tourism depends on this. We need good jobs. So it's not just the creators of the culture, but those that service our tourism economy, the people that work in the restaurants, the people that work in the hotels. They need good jobs. There needs to be fair pay. We need to address the issues of how these things cut across racial and ethnic lines in our city. There is a great disparity between front of house and back of house staff pay. And a lot of that, again, cuts through racial lines. Not so much the purview of this here, but it is part of sustainable tourism, a conversation that we need to continue to have, and serious issues that we need to address soon. This is responsible tourism. Now, in a previous life, when I was doing marine protected area work and coral reef work, a significant component of that, integrating the private sector into that stuff, was this idea of ecotourism. And it's been around for decades now. And making a very long story short, the simple way to put it is the idea behind ecotourism is to create an intrinsic economic value in leaving the natural resource in its place as opposed to extracting it. So in other words, don't cut down the forest for one payout on the logs. Leave the forest in place so people can visit it year after year after year and continue to derive an economic benefit from it. Kind of simple, not solved, doesn't work perfectly, but that's the idea. Sounds good on paper, right? There are a lot of tough questions to be asked when we throw the cultural component into this, the people part of this. Pepper brought up this question in the last segment, if I remember correctly. Do all neighborhoods need tourism? In the broad sense, probably not. They're residential. They need a thriving, healthy local economy that doesn't necessarily need to depend on tourism. But I will say this, that here in New Orleans, because of the fact that we are so dependent on tourism, the issue still remains of how to make sure that more of these economic benefits from that important segment of the economy flows to a broader array of people, flows into other neighborhoods in the city. Until we have a broader-based, more diversified economy, then this is going to be something that we're going to continue to depend on. So how do we do it as fair as possible in a sustainable, the most sustainable way possible? Now, I don't have all the answers. Don't get me wrong. And you're probably pretty clear on that by now by listening to this segment. But I will put it to you this way, that if you're visiting New Orleans or if you're going to explore some of these neighborhoods, part of the whole NOLA neighborhood series was to turn you on to places that you may not have ever heard of if you're not from the area, or may not be very familiar with if you are from the area. And we want you to go check out those places. Why? Because it's where so much of the culture of the city, and again, that is what we are selling here in our tourist economy, so much of that culture comes from these neighborhoods. So really the only message that I want to give to you here today is that if you do visit or you are going to explore these neighborhoods, always remember to be respectful. And do it in a way that is culturally sensitive. Maybe all you need to do is stroll some of the blocks. Go patronize a store. Go grab a bite in a local restaurant. Don't expect Disneyland-level tour stuff if you're going to go visit some of these neighborhoods. That's not what it's about. That's not what the culture is truly about. That's not how people will see economic benefits from this type of visitation, this type of tourism. One of the cool things about New Orleans is that, for the most part, we want to share our hospitality with you. We are a hospitable group of people. Another really cool part about it is that you only have to walk a handful of blocks to really be in a completely different part of the world. So get out there and stroll and check out some places. Drop a few dollars
into some of the local establishments. Be respectful of the people. Say hi to the people. Learn about who the people are. Learn about their reality. You'll have a much greater appreciation for what New Orleans is on a broader level. The magic of the city will make a lot more sense to you. And if you go about it that way, friends, I promise you, because of who we are here in New Orleans, you never know what you're going to find. That's our parting shot. Here's to you.